Once again, my name's Andy, and I'm still a grateful sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Andy.
My sobriety date, September 26, 1991, and my home group is the College Park Triangle Group, beautiful downtown College Park. And I think it's important to kind of give your sobriety date, because I never thought I would have had the amount of time that I did. And I think it's important to show other people that it can be done. You know, I decided I had enough back in September of 91 that I just couldn't take anymore, and found something, a program that worked, a spiritual program that worked for me, and it still works to this day. So at one time I had swore that I would not draw a sober breath, and here I am sitting in front of you today, sober for almost 21 years, and that in itself is a miracle. You know, so I think it's very important that everybody see that, and you guys can do it too, because it wasn't that long ago that I was sitting in the same place you guys were sitting, and had a couple of DUIs, spent some time in jail for violating my probation. So, you know, I'm pretty hard-headed, and all it took was a little bit of a psychic change, and you guys can be doing the same thing. Also, it's very important that you attend meetings and get a home group. Meeting makers make it. You have a 60% better chance of staying clean and sober if you do go to meetings. As soon as you get out of here, you know, recovery does not stop when you walk through that gate. It's just the beginning. Recovery is a lifelong thing. And believe me, I would much rather do that than live the way that I used to live. Life hadn't always been great, but I've had the tools to get through it without taking drinks, drink or using drugs. But anyway, also the last thing I want to say is grab yourself a big book, start studying the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is on the first 164 pages. Now, without further ado, I've got a treat tonight. I thought we'd have a speaker meeting. You know, I invited somebody out that a friend of mine from that visits our home group and attends a very big group that does a lot of service work. And I always like what he says in meetings. You know, those are things that are very important to me. You know, and they also say stick with the winners. Jim has a winning message. I want you guys to give him the respect that he is due tonight. So give it up for Jim.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to speak tonight.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jim.
Hey, Jim.
I introduce myself that way so I never forget what I am before I tell you who I am. I'll always be an alcoholic. I'm allergic to alcohol. I wind up in places like this, only much worse. And I didn't think I was an alcoholic for a long time. I started drinking when I was 11. I didn't come from alcoholic parents. My dad and my mom didn't drink hardly at all. They're military people. And I had three older sisters and an older brother, and they didn't hardly drink at all either. So what happened to me? You know, I don't know. But when I took my first drink when I was 11 years old, I was off to the races. I mean, it lit something in me that I can't explain to this day, other than I couldn't stand not having it, and I had to have it every day after that. And I'm going to tell you, this was back in the late 60s, early 70s, so you might think I'm old. And I'm old for a reason, is I found a program called Alcoholics Anonymous to save my life. Now, what happened was, when I was 11 years old, I moved down here with my family from Minnesota, and I fell in with a bunch of guys that liked to drink like I did, which was drink until oblivion, until I blacked out. And I didn't even care what I did to get to that oblivion. And so I wound up being a burglar, a thief, and then an armed robber. Between the ages of 13 and 17, I spent most of my time in a building on Michigan Avenue called the Juvenile Detention Facility. I didn't get to go to school because every time I went to school, I was skipping school, going to break in somewhere so I could get drunk or get drugs. And drugs were a big part of my story for a long time, but I was able to stop drugs at one time, but I never was able to stop alcohol. And, you know, I did things that today, I'm still ashamed of them. You know, I would say that I can't regret my past because that's what I use when I come and talk to guys like you. You know, I was sitting in that seat many times, and all I wanted to do was get out. I didn't like some man telling me what time I had to go to bed, or somebody telling me what I had to eat, or what I had to do. I didn't like it a bit. So why wouldn't I stop when I got out? The first place I'd go is someplace to get drunk, someplace to get high, every time. The consequences didn't matter, and the consequences just kept getting worse. You know, they got to the point where I was sticking guns at people's faces when I was 17 years old just so I could get drunk and getting caught. And you know, the only thing different between now and 40 years ago is y'all get caught a lot more often. The cops got smarter, you know? They got a lot smarter. I got hepatitis twice from shooting up heroin. Serum hepatitis, hepatitis C. I almost died in a military hospital in California when I was on the run from here. I got let out on bail when I was 17 years old on the last time I was arrested because my dad allowed me one last chance, you know. I said those words every alcoholic addict says at one time or another, you know, I'll never do it again, I promise. I'll never do it again. And the night he put that bail up, I stole the .45 automatic that he carried through three different wars. I went over the back wall and I took off to California on an armed robbery spree across the United States, shooting dope and getting drunk. And I came back here right as I turned 18 for a party that a bunch of friends of mine were having. And the Maitland Police Department knew the party was having and they knew I was going to be there. Apparently somebody told them. And they showed up about the time I'd shot up a bunch of PCP. I was drunk, I was crazy, and I had a gun. And the head of that SWAT department should have shot me dead, and he didn't. To this day, I don't know why. Because we were pointing guns at each other for more than a couple minutes, and I don't remember why I was pointing a gun. All I know is I had lost my mind. But I finally dropped my gun and was rearrested. Went before a judge. Now I'm 18 years old and he sentenced me to 52 years in Rayford State Prison. I'm 18 years old. I didn't know anything about God. I didn't go to church. I was never raised with God in our family. None of that stuff. But I was in an isolation cell because I had hepatitis for the second time. And the only thing in that isolation cell at the Orange County Jail was a Bible. Man, all I knew is to pick it up and just grab a hold of that Bible and say, please, God, help me. Please, God, help me. And I did that for 2 weeks, day and night, man. 18 years old going to Rayford. You know, this was back before they put any kind of controls on what happened in Rayford. 2 weeks later, I got taken before that judge, and he said, I've got a change of mind. You might have some redeeming qualities, as he called them. And so he sent me to what we had here in Orange County. It's called the chain gang. And so I went to a chain gang for 18 months. And he said, if you do 18 months out there, you know, I'll drop these other charges. And, that's a good deal. You know, that's a good deal. So I took the deal. And you guys probably see people going out now on work details. Some of you might even go out on a work detail. You got weed eaters and blowers and things like that. Well, take your head back to 1972. They didn't have that. They had something called a swing blade. Or, you know, some of you nodding your head, you know what I'm talking about. And that's what we did from sunup to sundown 6 days a week. We got out of a truck, we got in a ditch, we had two guards at each end of us. And if you moved without being told you could move, you weren't going back. They had permission to kill you. You know? If you ever get a chance to see the movie with Paul Newman called Cool Hand Luke, that's where I was. And it was miserable. And I thought I was going to die out there because I was some weak, wimpy little kid with all these big, strong men, kind of like Jimmy next to me. And, you know, coming out of isolation, coming out of hepatitis, getting out in this kind of sun, man, I was being put under the truck every day because I was falling out for the first 2 weeks. They didn't take you to the hospital, and you know, if you fell out, you got put under the truck until the end of the day. And I had plenty of ant bites to prove I sat underneath the truck because I couldn't do anything. But all I could think about is one thing. It wasn't about, you know, I need to reform my life. It wasn't about, you know, I need to do better. about how I could get drunk. I'm on a chain gang thinking, how can I get drunk? You know? You don't think I was crazy? Well, I was crazy enough to work my ass off on that chain gang so I could get inside that building, because we're feeding 150 prisoners every day, plus the guards. And I worked hard to get inside that kitchen, because I'm from Georgia. And in Georgia, if you get in a kitchen and you're feeding 150 people, there's the ingredients in that kitchen that you put them all together, and I'm not going to tell you what they are, but you put them all together in a can and let it ferment for a while. I don't know, anybody ever heard of Buck? Yeah, somebody's been to jail here before. They don't call it anywhere but jail. And I knew how to make it. And I made it every night. And I sold it. I was 18 years old making a living inside of a chain gang off of Buck and red and green bologna sandwiches, because that's what we had. And when I got out of there, I swore I was never going back. Swore it. Never going back to that. I was drunk before 24 hours was up. I was sticking needles in my arms before 48 hours was up. Because I had no defense. I had no program. They didn't bring anybody out there to talk to me. You worked sun up to sundown, you had Sunday off, and you were barely able to get out of your bed on Monday morning. Nobody came and told me there was a program that could save my life. But I didn't want to do the drugs anymore. And I watched two guys sitting next to me shooting up heroin just die right next to me. I mean, you know what? The fear stopped me from doing drugs. Not that I didn't want to go back to jail. Not that I didn't want to stop stealing. The fear of dying and watching these two guys do what they do. If you've never seen somebody die from a heroin overdose, it's not very pretty. But I didn't stop drinking. Drinking's legal. They sell it on every corner, you know, so why not? So what happened was, I was able to turn my life around a little bit. My dad was able to forgive me a little bit, and I got into a business, and I started doing real good. I found a girl that would marry me, and she did. And every night, I would be drunk. Every night for 21 years, that woman lived with me, and every night I would be drunk. And I'd either be throwing up on her, or throwing up in the bathroom. And towards the end of my drinking, I wasn't even getting out of bed to go to the bathroom. I was just peeing on my wife. And she didn't like it. And I don't blame her. You know, they have a name for it now, and I guess people like it, but you know what? I didn't like it, and she didn't like it. And I couldn't help it. I didn't have anything else. I wasn't an alcoholic, though. Trust me, I didn't believe I was an alcoholic, because I got up and went to work every day. You know, I didn't shake every morning. I didn't hide bottles under my bed. I got up and went to work. Worked hard. Made good money. Had a nice house on a lake. And every night, I was drunk. Blackout drunk. Blackout drunk to where I could do things that most normal people can't do when they're sober. And I could do them in a blackout. And people took pictures of me doing them to prove it to me. And I never believed that somebody could do something like that once you passed out. But passing out and blacking out is two different things, people. I don't know if you know that or not, but it is. And I got to the point where every time I drank just to get blacked out. Had a little boy when we were married 17 years, and by the time he was 5 years old, she had had enough, she left. And I really didn't want her to leave. You know what? I don't blame her. I don't blame her at all. I can't believe she stayed with me as long as she did. And somebody told me about a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't shake. I don't get up in the morning and have a drink. He said, yeah, but you might have a problem with alcohol. And I said, nah, not me. Not me. And then a friend of mine who was younger than me, about your age, burned himself up in a car because his parents told him, don't come home anymore if you're drunk. Tough love, you know. Don't come home if you're drunk. So he set the car on fire. And I went to his funeral, and it was really overpowering for me, because losing my little boy, losing the house, losing everything, but most of all, I've lost all my dignity. You know, by that time, what I was doing to myself was pretty much worse than I was doing to anybody else. And so I stumbled into a group called the Central Orlando Group on Colonial Drive. And I went in there for one meeting, and that was to tell all those drunks if they didn't quit drinking, they're probably going to kill themselves. Now, you all don't know how stupid that is, but there's people in there with 30 years sobriety, people like Andy with 20 years sobriety, and I'm a kid coming in there. I'm 44 years old, but I'm still a kid coming in there telling them they need to stop drinking. I was one sick individual. And what they told me was, why don't you try not to drink today and come back tomorrow? And that day I became an alcoholic because I couldn't do it. I tried. I tried my best. I watched that clock every minute, and I could not make it to midnight before I had to have something to drink. I was crawling out of my skin. But for some reason, and I can only tell you that God came into my life, and it's a God of my understanding. I don't preach. I still don't go to church. But I go to AA every day, sometimes twice. Because I've got a responsibility today. God came into my life and took me back to a second meeting. And they said, why don't you try not to drink today and come back tomorrow? And I couldn't do it. And I did it for 27 days. I went back to that meeting, but I got drunk before it was dark because I couldn't not do it. And then finally, somebody said something that clicked with me. Just one person out of all those people I heard, something clicked. And I went home, and for the first time in almost 34 years, I didn't drink and I didn't have any drugs. And that's a miracle. And I went back the next day and I picked up a white chip, which is real important to me, because when you pick up a white chip, you show the people who are trying to help you that you really want help. And what happened was, I got sober for a couple of months. I started feeling okay. My life started getting better. My wife wasn't coming back, but I was feeling better. And I said to myself, you know what? I can have one drink. It's not going to hurt me. 3 months later, I went back to my next meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's when I came to, because I'd been drunk for that long again. Our disease is a progressive disease. Alcoholism, drug addiction, it gets worse. It doesn't get better. And I did that for 3.5 years. I came in and out, in and out, in and out. And people were telling me, you're going to kill yourself. And I was like, nah, I'm not. Nah, it's going to be all right. I can have one drink. Anybody ever told you it's the first drink that gets you drunk? Well, that was about the stupidest thing they ever told me. I ain't never got drunk on one drink. But I ain't never got drunk unless I took that first drink. Because I got something wrong with me. I got something called an allergy. That when I take one drink, it sets off a craving in me that I can't control. I got to have another drink. And then I black out. And then I do things that I don't remember. You know, when I talk to people, I tell them I never raped anybody and I never killed anybody. And that's in all honesty. And I don't know that for a fact. I don't know that for a fact because of what I can do in a blackout. And after 3.5 years of trying, I went 9 months without a drink, going to AA every day. I was getting on my knees praying. I was not working the 12 steps of recovery. I was not working with a sponsor. Two important things I just said I wasn't doing. And I went to a meeting and a guy told my story. It was a speaker meeting and he told my story. My drink of choice was Schlitz malt liquor. No offense, but I thought I was the last white guy in the world drink Schlitz malt liquor. Because all my brother friends drank it, but none of my white friends drank it. They drank everything else. They wouldn't drink mine, and that was fine by me. I'd drink theirs, but I'd always have mine left over. I drank for effect. It says in this book, the doctor's opinion, that men and women like us drink for the effect produced by alcohol. We don't drink for the taste. We don't wind up in places like this because we drink for the taste. You know, I'm sorry. We don't. And we wind up in country clubs and driving Maseratis and things like that. And so I got this man to be my sponsor after 9 months of not taking a drink, and I promised to call him on Monday, and we were going to start working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on Sunday, I decided to have a drink. One drink. Just one. And I bought a half gallon of whiskey, because I'm going to have one drink. I'm going to save the rest of that whiskey for later on, but I'm going to have one drink that night. And what happened was, when I came to the next morning, I was face down on my kitchen floor. I was covered in blood. I was covered in pee and vomit. And I didn't know whose blood was on me. I had no clue what I had done. But I knew after the first drink, I was gone. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what happened. I blacked out. And it wasn't from that first drink, because half that bottle was gone. And I called that man up and I said, I don't know what happened, but I got a problem and I'm going to die. And we met that day and we started working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was February 18, 2002. And when I was here in February, I just celebrated 10 years without taking a drink. And you know what? That's a miracle. It's a miracle that I could go one day without taking a drink or a desire to take a drink. But I told you that God came into my life. I turned my will and my life over to the care of something I can't see, I can't feel, but I know He's there. I know it's real. I don't have a name for Him. I don't call Him anything special. He's not a doorknob, He's not a tree, He's not a basketball hoop. It's something real. Because I've had experiences in my life that only a higher power can put in my life. It's nothing that Jim does, I guarantee you. You know, I shouldn't be alive to begin with. 4 years ago, I moved to my dream. My biggest dream in life was to own a couple acres back up in Georgia. Go up there and die. You know? And I wound up getting 50 acres up there. Just going up there and meeting a man. I wound up owning 50 acres and don't own a penny on it. But I was up there and I got a phone call from somebody that I'd never met. They were a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, your little brother, who's 10 years younger than me, is in the hospital. And he's in intensive care, and they want a family member down here. And my little brother had 5 DUIs. Couldn't ever drive again. Couldn't ever drink again, because they had a band that was around his ankle. I don't know if y'all heard about them. It wasn't for GPS. It was for his sweat glands. If he took another drink, he was going to go to prison for 5 years. So he didn't drink for over a year. But the effects of untreated alcoholism, he had liver cancer, brain cancer, lung cancer, and it all was directly because he didn't want this program called Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't want to try a spiritual way of life. And that's what we have, is a spiritual way of life. There's no religion in our program. People come in and they see the word God and they go, oh my God, it's a religious program. Let me tell you, it's not. I wouldn't be there. Nobody's going to force religion on me. And nobody could force a higher power on me. I had to come to believe that I was insane to pick up that drink and think I could have one drink after what I'd done to myself. And so when I turn my will and my life over to God, and I do that every day, He keeps me sober, keeps me alive, and He allows me to do things that I can't do. And I'll tell you right now, I can't do it. I didn't go to school. But on the chain gang, they brought a guy out from Orange County, from the school system. And so I got a GED at night on a chain gang. And let me tell you, my math score was 50. My English score was 45. But I got a piece of paper that's got a number on it that says I've got a GED. And by that GED and by the state of Florida removing my felonies, I've been able to go to college and become an emergency medical technician. Not because I want to go out and run in ambulances or run in fire trucks. I just said I can't do it. So I tried it. And I am one. They told me I'd never own a gun the rest of my life. I have a concealed weapons permit. The FBI granted me a concealed weapons permit. Go figure that. Why? Well, where I was at and what I was doing in Georgia, I needed to have a gun. And it was given to me. Here recently, people said, you'll never drive an 18-wheeler. So I went to 18-wheeler school, and I drove across the country for a month. Homeland Security granted me a hazardous material carrier's license. That means I can haul dynamite and anything else I want in a truck. This is something I can't do. On my own, I can't do any of that stuff. But with God in my life, I don't know that there's anything I can't do. And I know that what Andy said at the beginning of this, when you all walk through that gate and you're through here, I'm being told by some people you can walk out that gate right now. But I'm pretty sure you're going back to jail. Some of you are going to prison. Some of you are going right to the dope man. And some of you are going to die. That's the way this thing works. 4 years ago, I held my little brother's hand when he took his last breath. He died in my arms. Why? Because he didn't want to try a spiritual way of life. He didn't want to try recovery. He didn't want to just give it a shot. And so I'm here tonight to tell you, there's nothing you can't do. I mean, if you get out of here and you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you bring your dreams. You know, that's what an old man told me one time. Bring your dreams. Bring your drunk dreams. Bring your dope dreams. And see what happens. See what happens when you let God into your life. Your God, not mine. You got to find your own. You know? And I hope every one of you get out of here. And one of you, if just one of you, says, I've had enough of somebody telling me what to do. I don't want to be here on a Saturday night. I'd like to be doing something else other than being drunk, shooting dope, or going to jail. You got a chance. And we're there to help you if you want it. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah.